gave him a wise owl stare. "Because you think it's a chick flick."
"It is a chick flick."
"That's where you're wrong."
"Does anything blow up?"
"No, but there's nudity and adult language. It's not a chick flick. It's just a really excellent movie. I have my own DVD of this one. And this one." She held up a copy of The Terminator.
"That's a movie."
"Why are you nervous?" "I'm not nervous. I'm basking and using my handy tool while discussing cinema."
"Avery."
Having someone who knew your moods just that well, she thought, could be an upside or a downside, depending on the situation. Anyway, it saved time. "I'm afraid your family sent you in here to tell me no way, no how on the new restaurant idea."
"We haven't decided either way. We looked over the space, kicked some things around. It looks doable, on our end. But Beckett needs to work on it some."
"Doable, on your end." She knew him too. "But not so much on mine."
"I didn't say that, but I'm wondering how you're going to manage your time, focus, energies. I've got a pretty good idea how much time and work you put in at Vesta."
She zipped the next DVD. "What makes you think so?"
"Because I've watched you," he thought, "more than I realized.
I eat there, have meetings there. I've been working across the street from your place virtually every damn day for more than a year. I've got a picture, Avery." "If you've got an accurate picture, you'd see I know what I'm doing."
"I'm not saying otherwise, but what you're talking about means doing it in two places. It feels like you'd be taking on more than one person could handle."
Taking her time, she balled the trash, tossed it in the box beside her. "I get the feeling that your vote on this proposal's coming in on the no side."
"I didn't say that either."
"You don't have to. I've known you, Owen, as long as you've known me.
None of us wants you to wear yourself out, or get yourself in a bind."
Just in case she'd be tempted to throw it, Avery set the DVD zipper down, carefully. "Do you think I don't know my capabilities and limits and my potential? How many irons are in your fire, Owen? How many rental properties do you oversee? How many jobs have you got in various stages? How many clients on your list, people on your payroll, subcontractors to juggle?"
"There are a lot of us to handle it. There's just one Avery."
She shoved at her hair, currently the shade of glossy mahogany. "Don't give me that. I know you take the lead on the rentals. You deal with the tenants. I know because I am a tenant. You're the detail man, Owen, and Montgomery Family Contractors has a hell of a lot of details. Ryder's job boss, Beckett designs the space, your mom handles the books, helps clients with interior design, and looks at the big picture. You tie all the little pieces together, and every one of you, including your mom from time to time, builds."
"That's true, but..."
"But nothing!" Temper rising, she snapped the words off. "You've worked across the street from my place for over a year. Well, right back at you. I've seen just what you've done, had to do, dealt with, figured out. You, Owen, individually as well as with the rest. If you told me you were planning to remodel the freaking White House, I'd figure you could do just that. You ought to have the same faith in me."
"It's not a matter of faith," he began, but she was shoving up to her feet.
"Listen, if the answer's no, it's no. It's your property, and you've got a right to rent it to whoever you rent it to. I wouldn't hold it against you, any of you. But the answer better not be no just because you don't think I'm up for it."
"Avery."
"No, just no. You should have asked to see my business plan, my scheduling outline, my menu, my P&L from Vesta, and my projected budget on the new restaurant. You should have treated me with the same respect as you would any other business person, any other prospective tenant. I'm not a dreamer, Owen, and I never have been. I know what I can do, then I do it. If you don't get that, then you don't know me as well as both of us thought."
He knew her well enough not to follow her out when she walked away. She wasn't just mad. That he could get around.
but he'd managed to hurt her as well as piss her off.
"Good job," he muttered. To give himself some time to think, he gathered up the DVDs she'd done, stacked them in the cabinet under the wall-mounted flat screen, automatically alphabetizing them as he went. Chapter 9. He considered approach and timing, and gave a lot of weight to holiday spirit. At 5 o'clock on Christmas Eve, Owen knocked on Avery's door. She'd dyed her hair. Again, he noted. This time in a shade he thought of as Christmas red. She wore skinny black pants that showed off the shape of her legs, and a crisscrossing sweater as blue as her eyes. Her feet were bare, so he saw she'd married the Christmas red hair with Christmas green toenail polish. Why was that sexy?
"Merry Christmas!"
"Not yet."
"Okay, Merry Christmas Eve."
Working it, he added an easy smile.
"Got a minute?"
"Not much more, then. I'm going down to Claire's for a while, then heading over to Dad's. I'm staying there tonight, so..."
"You can fix him Christmas breakfast. Hang out before you both go to my mother's for her Christmas thing."
He tapped his fingers to his temple.
"Everybody's holiday schedule, right here. Hope's in Philadelphia, having the eve with her family, and heading back tomorrow afternoon. Rye's swinging by Claire's, then we're both figuring on staying the night at Mom's."
"So you can get Christmas breakfast and dinner?"
"It's a big draw."
"If you're going to Claire's, why are you here? I'll see you in a half hour."
"I wanted a few minutes. Can I come in, or are you still pissed at me?"
"I'm not pissed at you. I got over it."
She stepped back to let him in.
"You started unpacking," he commented.
By his gauge, she'd reduced the stacks of boxes and tubs by more than half.
"Continued unpacking," she corrected. "I was pissed. I cook when I'm mad or upset. My father has a freezer loaded with lasagna, manicotti, various soups, so I had to stop and shift the energy to more unpacking. Nearly done."
"Productive."
"I hate to waste a good mad."
"I'm sorry."
She shook her head, waved it off.
"I have to finish getting dressed."
When she turned toward the bedroom, he followed. He didn't wince. No point making her mad again, but she'd obviously had some trouble deciding on the sweater and pants. Other choices, rejected, were scattered over the bed. He'd always admired the antique brass bed, the turned spindles, the old-fashioned charm of it. But it was tough to appreciate it buried under heaps of clothes, pillows, and her overnight bag. She pulled open the top drawer of her dresser, where Owen figured most people stored underwear, but saw clearly the entire drawer of earrings.
"Jesus, Avery, how many ears do you have?"
"I don't wear rings, a watch, bracelets, usually. They don't do well with pizza dough and sauces, so I compensate."
After some study, she tried on silver hoops with smaller hoops dangling within the circle.
"What do you think?"
"Ah. Nice."
She took them off, changed them for dangles of blue stones and silver beads.
"I came by to..."
Her gaze whipped to his in the mirror.
"I have something to say first."
"Okay, you first."
She moved to the bed, added a couple more things to the overnight bag, zipped it.
"I may have overreacted a little the other day. A little. Because it was you, I think, and I expected you to believe in me."
"Avery..."
"Not finished."
Moving quickly, she crossed to the bathroom, brought out a hanging bag. When she laid it on the bed, he saw through the clear front it was loaded with makeup and all those tools women used. How did she have time to use that much makeup? When did she? He'd seen her face without all the stuff. It was a really good face.
"I should have expected you'd think of practicalities first. I guess I wanted you to think of what I wanted first."
"Still not finished," she said when he opened his mouth.
She rolled the bag, tied it, set it in the overnight.
"Then, after I'd cooked enough so that the town of Boonesboro will eat well should there be an unexpected famine, and unpacked stuff I'm not even sure why I have to begin with, I realized that while I'd be really upset if your family said no because they didn't think I could handle it, I really don't want you to say yes just because it's me, and there's a family friendship history. She turned now. I want to be respected, but I won't be pandered to. Maybe that's a hard line for you, Owen, but it's my line. I'm not moving it.
It's fair, and I'll probably slip off the line sometimes. So will you.
Yeah, you're right. But we need to try to stay on it. She went to the closet, got out a pair of boots. Tall black boots, he noted, with high, skinny heels. He'd never seen her wear them, or really anything quite like them. She sat on the bench at the foot of her bed. His mouth went dry as she pulled them on, zipped them up.
So, I wanted to say...
He trailed off as she rose.
Wow.
It's the boots, right? Considering, she looked down at them. Hope talked me into them.
I love Hope, he said as she pulled open the door of the closet, checked herself out in the full-length mirror on the back.
I've never seen you wear anything like that. It's Christmas Eve. I'm not working.
You're working for me.
She laughed, sent him a sparkling look. Your reaction is noted and appreciated. I rarely get a chance to wear heels. Hope's helping me fill in the wide, wide gaps in my shoe wardrobe. We'd better get going. Since you're here, you can help me haul down the presents so I don't have to keep going up and down the steps in these boots.
Sure, but I still need that minute.
Oh, right, sorry. I thought it was about the thing, and we dealt with the thing.
Not the whole thing.
He took a brightly wrapped box out of his coat pocket.
We have this tradition in my family about getting one present on Christmas Eve.
I remember.
So here's yours.
Is this a I better make up with her or she won't sleep with me next week present?
No. I saved that one for tomorrow.
She laughed again, made him grin with the quick, cheerful peel of it. Can't wait to see that one. She took the box, shook. Got nothing. You patted it.
You're a shaker. Everybody knows.
I like to guess first. It adds to the suspense. Could be earrings, she speculated. As you were so appalled by my earring drawer, let me say, if so, trust me, you can never have too many. She ripped away, tossing the ribbon and paper on her dresser. She opened the box, pulled off the cotton batting he'd used to pad it, and saw two keys.
For the building across the street, he told her. Both sides.
She lifted her gaze to his face, said nothing.
I looked over your business plan after you sent it to Mom. That and your menu, the rest. It's solid. It's good. You're good.
He let out a breath when she sat on the bench again, just stared at the keys in the box.
Full disclosure, Ryder gave you the thumbs up from the jump. The little red machine. You know he calls you that sometimes.
She nodded, didn't speak.
Beckett came down on your side after he'd gone through the buildings again. Part of that, if you ask me, is because now he wants to design it, wants his hands in it. But the other part is because he believes in you.
And Mom?
You're planning to do exactly what she wants in that space. More than she thought she could get. She doesn't have any doubts. As for me...
If you'd said no, it would be no.
His brows drew together, his hands dug into his pockets.
Wait a minute. Wait, we don't work that way. Owen. Head down, she turned the keys over and over in the box. They listen to you. Maybe it doesn't feel like it or seem like it to you all the time. But on something like this, on business, they know you're the go-to, and they respect that. The same as you all respect Beckett on design, and Ryder on the builds, on the hiring and firing of crew. You have no idea how much I've admired and envied your family over the years.
He couldn't think of a thing to say.
You didn't say no.
It wasn't a matter of not believing in you, Avery. Not ever. You were right that I should have asked to see your projections and plans. But I wasn't thinking of you that way. I wasn't looking at you that way. I'm not used to thinking and looking at you at this, at us, the way I am now. And we haven't really started. Still staring down at the keys, she said nothing. You work so hard.
I need to.
She pressed her lips tight together for a moment.
I'm not going to talk about that, the whole psych thing, the issue thing. Not now, okay?
Okay. Oh, man. When she lifted her eyes to his, they were brimming, gorgeous, heartbreaking, shimmering blue. Do you have to?
I'm not going to cry. God damn it, I'm not going to ruin my makeup. I spent forever on my stupid makeup.
You look great. He sat on the bench beside her. You look amazing.
I'm not going to cry. I just need a minute to pull it back.
But she lost the battle on one single tear, then swiped it quickly away.
I didn't know how much I wanted this, not until I opened that box. Maybe I didn't let myself know so I wouldn't be crushed if you said no.
Still battling tears, she took another slow breath.
I'd rather be pessimistic than disappointed, so I didn't tell anybody how much I wanted this. Not even Claire, not even my dad. I told myself it was just business, just a proposal. But it's a lot more to me. I can't explain it to you right now. I can't screw up my makeup, and I'm going to be really happy in a minute anyway.
He took her hand, considered ways to flip the tears toward that happy. What are you naming it?
McTee's Restaurant and Tap Room.
I like it.
Me too.
And what does the famous McTavish gut feeling say about it?
That I'm going to rock it! Oh God, it's going to be great! Oh, God!
Laughing now, she threw her arms around him, then leaped up to bounce in those skinny, sexy boots.
Just you wait. I have to stop in downstairs, get a bottle of champagne. Two bottles!
She leaped into his arms when he rose.
Thank you.
It's business.
Thanks are still appropriate.
You're right.
And this is personal.
She pressed her lips to his, slid her fingers into his hair. Swayed against him.
Thank you so much.
You're not going to thank my brothers like that, right?
Not exactly like that.
She laughed, hugged him again.
Neither of them was my first boyfriend.
She broke away, grabbed for her overnight bag.
We're going to be late now. You hate being late.
Tonight's the exception.
Make another? Don't get that look on your face when we go over into the wrapping area to get the presents. I know it's disorganized and messy.
I'll have no look. He took the overnight bag while she swung on a coat, a scarf, pulled on gloves, and he manfully restrained his expression when she led him into the room full of presents, bags, wrapping, tangled ribbon.
All this?
Some's for tonight, some's for Dad's, some for your mother's. I like Christmas.
It shows.
He handed her back the overnight, as it would be the lightest and easiest to carry.
Go ahead, get your champagne. I'll start loading this.
Thanks.
At least she'd stacked gifts into open cardboard boxes, he thought, as he hefted the first of several. And because she'd left the room, he let his eyes roll toward the ceiling.
I heard that look!
She called out, and her laughter echoed back as she hurried down the stairwell. From the time she walked into Claire's with presents for the kids, the dogs, her friends, with bottles of champagne and one of the trays of lasagna she'd made during her mad, until the time when she crawled into her childhood bed, Avery found Christmas Eve absolutely perfect.
Since Claire had come back to Boonesboro, a young widow with two little boys and a baby growing inside her, Avery had spent a few hours of the night before Christmas with Claire and her children. But this year, the house brimmed full with Montgomerys. This year, she'd watched little Murphy climb up Beckett's leg, nimble as a monkey, while Beckett continued to talk football with Claire's father. And Owen, patiently helping Harry build some complex battleship out of what looked like 500,000 Legos. Ryder challenging Liam to a PlayStation tournament, while Dumbass and the two puppies milled around, wrestled, and surreptitiously begged for food. She'd enjoyed listening to Justine and Claire's mother talk about wedding plans, and she caught the twinkle in her father's eyes when he looked at Justine. How had she ever missed it? Everything in her warmed at his big belly laugh when Murphy deserted Beckett to climb up the tree trunk of Willie B's leg. There was magic yet in the world, she'd thought, because she'd seen it in three young boys. Still more magic, she decided now as she lay in bed watching the sun slowly tint the sky outside her window, when Owen had walked her out to her car. When he'd kissed her in the frosty air with the shimmer of lights, the smell of pine lingering. A wonderful night. She closed her eyes to hold it to her one more moment, and a wonderful day ahead. She slipped out of bed, quiet, quiet. Pulled on thick socks, clipped her hair back. In the low light, she pulled the bag out of her overnight, before creeping out of the room. She tiptoed down, right on the fourth step since it creaked in the middle, and into the living room with its big, sagging sofa, its big, brightly decorated tree, and its little brick fireplace with two stockings hung. Hers bulged. "How does he do that?" she muttered. The stocking had been empty the night before. They'd gone up to bed at the same time, and she'd read for an hour to decompress from the evening. She'd heard him snoring in the next room. He managed it every year. No matter when she went to bed or how early she rose, he'd fill that stocking as he had every year of her life. Shaking her head, she filled his with the silly gifts, his favorite candy, a turn-the-page gift certificate, and the annual lottery ticket, because you never knew. She stepped back, smiling, hugged herself. Just two stockings, she thought. But they were full. They were close, and they mattered. In her thick socks and flannel pajamas, she went into the kitchen, one no bigger than the one in her apartment. She'd learned to cook here, she remembered, on the old gas stove, out of necessity at first. Willie B could do a great many things, and do them well. Cooking wasn't on the list. He'd tried, she remembered, so hard. When her mother walked out, he'd tried so hard to bridge that gap, to keep his daughter level, happy, to make sure she knew how much he loved her. He'd succeeded there, but in the kitchen. Burned pans, undercooked chicken, overcooked meat, singed vegetables, or vegetables cooked to mush. She'd learned. And what she'd begun out of necessity became a kind of love. And maybe a little compensation, she thought now as she opened the refrigerator for eggs, milk, butter. He'd done so much for her, been so much for her. Making a meal meant she could give something back. God knew he'd praised her early efforts to the skies. She prepared to fix him Christmas breakfast, as she had every year since she'd been 12. By the time she had coffee brewed, bacon draining, the little round table in the dining room set, she heard his footsteps and his booming, "Ho, ho, ho!" Every year, she thought with a grin, as dependable as the sunrise.
"Merry Christmas, my beautiful little girl."
"Merry Christmas, my big, handsome father." She rose to her toes to kiss him, burrowed into his bear hug. Nobody, she thought, wallowing a little, But nobody gave hugs as wonderful as Willie B. McTavish. He pecked a kiss on top of her head.
"I see Santa came, filled the stockings."
"I saw that. He's sneaky. Have some coffee. We've got OJ, fresh berries, bacon, and the griddle heating up for pancakes."
"Nobody cooks like my girl."
"Nobody eats like my dad." He slapped his hand on his belly.
"Big space to fill."
"That you are, Willie B. But you know, when a man has a girlfriend, he has to watch his figure." His ears went pink.
"Oh, now, Avery."
Adoring him, she drilled him playfully in the belly, then sobered. "I'm happy for you, Daddy. For both of you. That you have each other. You know Tommy would be happy, too. That Justine has you. And you have her."
"We're just..."
"It doesn't matter. What matters is having each other. Drink your coffee."
"Yes, ma'am."
He took the first sip.
"Never tastes as good when I make it."
"Your kitchen challenged, Dad. It's a curse."
"It sure missed you. I like seeing you in here, baby. You were always a natural cook. And now you're going to have two restaurants."
"And a pub."
"You're a dynasty."
She laughed as she ladled batter on the hot griddle. "A tiny one, but I'm pretty excited. It'll be a while, but I need a while to finish planning it out."
"Justine's excited, too. And real pleased it's you moving in there. She sets a lot of store by you."
"As I do with her. With all of them. Wasn't it great being at Claire's last night?"
"Happy as Christmas morning," she flipped the pancakes.
"Seeing everybody there, seeing how the kids are with Beckett, with all of them, all that noise and sweetness and... family."
As she looked over at her father, her smile went wistful.
"You wanted a big family."
"I've got the best family any man could have, right here in the kitchen."
"Me too. But I wanted to say, I know you wanted lots of kids, and you'd have been great with a big family. Just as great as you were with just me."
"What do you want, baby?"
"It looks like I want two restaurants."
Willie B. cleared his throat.
"And Owen."
She flipped the pancakes onto a platter, glanced over her shoulder. As she suspected, her big guy blushed.
"It looks like I want him, too. You're all right with that?"
"He's a good boy. Man. You always had an eye for him."
"Dad, I was 5. I didn't know what having an eye meant."
"I wouldn't be so sure. I just... you let me know if he doesn't treat you right."
"And you'll crush him like a worm."
Putting on a fierce scowl, Willie B. flexed his considerable biceps.
"If I have to."
"I'll keep it in mind." She turned with the platter of steaming pancakes. "Let's eat, so we can go rip into those presents."
It wouldn't be Christmas to Avery's mind without a crowd in the kitchen. She'd always appreciated Justine for opening her house, and the big kitchen in it, to her, to her father. And this year, with the addition of Claire and the kids, Claire's parents and Hope, crowds milled everywhere. And kids, she mused. Claire's boys, Carolee's 2 granddaughters, squeeze in Justine's 2 dogs, who managed to do just that as often as possible, Ryder's D.A., and the 2 puppies, and Christmas was, to Avery, as perfect as it got. She loved her one-on-one time with her father, but this, the noise, the overstimulated kids, the excited dogs, the smell of ham baking, sauces simmering, pies cooling, plucked a chord deep inside her. She wanted this, had always wanted this for herself, for her own. She stopped mincing garlic long enough to take the glass of wine Owen offered her.
"You look happy."
"If you're not happy on Christmas, when?"
Curious, he peered into the mixing bowl beside her.
Smells good.
It'll taste better when it's inside the mushroom caps and baked.
Stuffed mushrooms, huh? Maybe you can make some of those for next week?
She took another sip of wine, set down the glass, and went back to mincing. I could do that.
How about those little meatballs you do sometimes?
Cocktail meatballs.
Yeah, those.
It's possible.
I tapped Mom for a ham. Thought I'd slice it up for sandwiches. Maybe get a couple of party platters of cheese and dipping vegetables, like that.
And don't get platters. Just get the stuff. I'll show you how to tray it.
He'd hoped she'd say that. Okay. If you give me a list of what you need for the other stuff, I'll pick it up.
D.A. snuck up, sat delicately on her foot to get her attention. Avery gave him as solemn a look as he gave her.
You don't want this, she assured him.
She heard wild laughter. Harry's roll up from the lower-level family room.
I'm number one! Number one, suckers!
We, Owen shook his head with mock sorrow, brings out the best or the worst in us.
What are they playing?
Boxing when I walked up.
I can take the kid in that. I can take him.
She looked over where Claire layered a huge casserole for scalloped potatoes.
I'm taking your firstborn to the mat. It's going to be a KO. I'll show him no mercy. He's sneaky, and he's been practicing.
Avery flexed her biceps, much as her father had that morning.
Small but mighty.
He hits below the belt, Ryder snarled as he came through. You're raising a ball puncher, he said to Claire.
Beat you?
In 3 rounds, but he cheats. Ryder opened the fridge for a beer, frowned. What's this fancy deal in here?
Trifle.
Hope reached around him, took out a vegetable crudité. A trifle of what? Looks pretty big to me.
It's a dessert, a double chocolate trifle. Here, you can take this downstairs.
He gave it the same suspicious sneer he'd given the trifle. Kids don't want carrots and celery and crap. They want chips, and the runt likes salsa. Hotter the better.
They're having carrots and celery and crap, Claire told him. And Murphy's not having hot salsa and taco chips before dinner. Neither are you.
Justine didn't spare him a glance as she checked her ham.
Owen, grab those pot holders and take this out for me. It's heavy. Claire, the oven's yours.
How soon do we eat actual food? Ryder qualified.
About 1.5 hours.
We're men. Boxing, skiing, alien fighting, football playing, race car driving men. We need real food now.
Appetizers in 30,
Avery called out and snagged his attention. You making some of the stuff you make?
I am.
Okay. He took the tray, his beer, started back downstairs. Why do they call it trifle when it's big?
I'll look that up,
Hope promised. Do that. Come on, dumbass. This is all we're going to get. A little mournfully, the dog followed Ryder down where Harry's latest cheer burst out.
Still number one!
All right, taking 5.
Avery pulled off her bib apron, tossed it aside.
Somebody needs a spanking.
After rolling her shoulders, she marched downstairs. And marched back up 5 minutes later with Harry's catcalls ringing behind her.
He beat the crap out of me.
She paused for a moment, scanned the kitchen, the women, the movements. Heard her father's big belly laugh rise up the stairs, and Justine's and Carolee's voices from the dining room. She slipped out to the living room, still disordered from the morning. Open gifts scattered under the tree, shining in the window. Justine's dog Cuss sprawled on his back, feet in the air as he caught a nap in front of the simmering fire. The ruckus from the family room rumbled under her feet like a minor earthquake.
Something wrong?
Owen asked her, and she turned. And she smiled as she crossed to him, slid her arms around him, laid her head on his chest.
No. Everything's right. Everything's exactly right.
Chapter 10 On a supply run the week after Christmas, Avery broke down and bought her own Wii. She'd resisted. She was on her feet hours every day already. She didn't have time to play games. And why would she play by herself, anyway? But facing a second defeat, in the rematch with Harry after Christmas dinner, then tanking and bowling so humiliatingly even Carolee's 4-year-old granddaughter beat her score, changed everything. She'd learn. She'd practice. She'd come back and take them all. Meanwhile, she juggled as fast as she could, tossing pizzas, making sauces, firing a delivery guy, damn it, redoing the schedule to compensate until she hired a replacement. When she could, she helped Hope put some finishing touches on the inn, and, big sacrifice, stayed a night in Wesley and Buttercup for a status report. She shoehorned in time for projections and plans for her new place. Walked through it to take her own measurements, sketch out some basic ideas to pass on to Beckett. She barely saw Owen. The brothers' focus zeroed more truly on the building next door to the inn now, and she really had no excuse and no time to poke her nose in there. Yet. Every night before bed, she took a last look out the window at the building directly across and imagined McTeese. Imagined hers, and she gave a final good night to the inn. Once or twice she thought she saw a woman silhouetted at the rail, waiting for Billy. She wondered at the devotion. Most people, to her mind, couldn't hang on to a relationship in the normal course of events, yet here was someone who held on beyond the impossible. Maybe one day, she hoped one day, that faithfulness would be rewarded, at least with answers. And every morning she gazed out again at what would be hers and at what could be done. Though she waited too, she never saw that steadfast figure in the light of day. Between those two points, the last look at night and the first look in the morning, Christmas week passed in a blur. At 4 on New Year's Eve, she closed the restaurant, ran upstairs, ran back down to her car with the pot of meatballs she'd made the night before, raced back upstairs. By 5, she'd showered, fussed with her hair, her face, dressed and packed an overnight bag. A different process than the week before, she mused, seeing as she wore sexy underwear and had packed tiny black boxers and a skinny black tank to sleep in. What would it be like to sleep with Owen? Okay, she decided as she zipped the bag. She wasn't going to think about it, try to imagine it, get bogged down in speculation. Better to let it evolve. Be surprised. She grabbed her bag, texting Hope on her way out. Heading over now for wardrobe check. She piled in the car, shook back hair she'd rinsed a smoldering red, blew out a breath. Hope's answer came back before she'd turned the key in the ignition. I'm here to serve. Avery drove across the square to the inn's lot, jumped out as Hope opened the door to reception.
I was just organizing my office.
You already organized your office.
I wanted to make some changes, and while I was in there, I checked reservations. 2 more in March.
Go, team!
Okay, be honest.
Pulling off her coat, she tossed it over the high-backed chair in front of the fire, did a quick spin.
Slow it down, Speedy.
Right. Avery took another breath.
I'm a little wired. I had a vicious day, which I'll tell you about later. Then I couldn't decide on the earrings, and I always know which earrings, which made me realize I'm a little nervous. I'm going to have sex with Owen next year, which is tomorrow, tonight, after the party.
The earrings are great, Hope told her, giving a nod to the thin silver wires holding citrine drops.
Great color for you, and for the dress. Now, slow turn.
Avery complied, showing off the short, snug dress in shimmery copper.
Love it. Love the shoes, the way they pick up the metallic of the dress, but subtly. You know, I've bought more shoes since you moved here than I did in the 5 years prior. See how good I am for you?
What's under the dress? The Marguerite and Percy pomegranate body lotion and the citrony-colored demi bra and thong you talked me into. Exceptional choice all around. Plus, wiggling her eyebrows, Avery pointed at her chest. The bra hoists and squeezes everything so it looks like I have more than I do. Which every woman is entitled to, and every man appreciates. But, considering, Hope walked a circle around Avery. You need a little something. I do? I've got just the thing. The bracelet my sister gave me for Christmas. I can't wear your new gift. Sure you can. My sister likes you. It's fun and comfortable, all these bronze, copper, and dull gold beads. I'll go up and get it. Why aren't you getting dressed? Claire and Beckett aren't picking me up till about 8. I've got plenty of time. Grab a soda if you want. And there are some muffins. I'm trying out recipes. Avery decided caffeine wasn't the best idea and opted for a ginger ale. She was wired enough. In a good way. She loved a good party, and Owen tended to throw good ones. She knew the food would pass, as she'd made or would make most of it. And she looked good. Hope would have told her if she hadn't hit the mark. It would be fun. Lots of friends, food, drink, music, gossip. And at the end of it, she'd open a new door for the new year with this new connection with Owen. If it doesn't work, well, no harm, no foul, right? She murmured, and took a long drink as she wandered toward the lobby. No flowers yet, she mused, but everything gleamed and shone. Hope would make sure it continued to gleam and shine. The air smelled of the T&O scent, pixie dust, subtle and sweet. She wandered into the dining room, studied the building across St. Paul. In a matter of months, she thought, she'd open her new place. She hoped she'd be ready. She hoped she was ready for the steps she intended to take tonight. He was my first boyfriend. The scent of honeysuckle drifted over her, a summer breeze. Her heart tripped into her throat, part excitement, part nerves as she turned. I didn't know you came down here, but I guess you can go where you want. Looks nice in here with the art hung. Actually, I was thinking about saving up, buying... A still life of sunflowers tipped crooked on the wall, then straightened again. Ha! Yeah, that one. Wow, nice trick. Anyway, Happy New Year, she added when she heard Hope, assumed she heard Hope, coming back down. She walked to the hallway. I didn't know your inmate... Get it? Came down to the first floor. Now and then. Did she? Yeah. It's my first solo encounter. How are you dealing with it? We're fine. Cool and casual, Hope moved toward the kitchen. I spent the night in Elizabeth and Darcy last night. Seriously? Weren't you a little... Instead of words, Avery gave an exaggerated shudder. Not really. If I can't sleep in there, we can't expect guests to pay to sleep in there. And no problem. Opening the fridge, she helped herself to a bottle of water. It's a beautiful, comfortable room. And that's it? No activity from the other side? Well, I was in bed, working on my laptop, and about midnight, the bedside lamps went off. Shit! I didn't hear you scream! I didn't. It gave me a moment, I can't lie, but they came back on when I turned the switch. She turned them off again a few seconds later. I finally got the picture. Lights out, get some sleep. What did you do? I turned off my laptop. Hope laughed, took a long sip of water. I was half asleep over it anyway. Once I settled down, the oddest thing happened. Odder than that? I heard the door across the hall open and shut. It seemed to me like a signal from her. She'd stay over there, and I could have some privacy. I appreciated it. Here, try this. Hope hooked the bracelet around Avery's wrist. We should try to find out who Billy is. The lights flickered on and off, then seemed to glow just a little brighter.
Ah, I think she likes that idea.
I just haven't had time. Once we get through the opening and I find my routine, I can do some research.
I will do some.
I'll say something about it to Owen. Between the two of you, you'll find something.
Pretty. Avery wiggled her wrist.
Thanks.
I should go.
I told him I'd try to be there around 5:30 to help him prep and set up.
You're an excellent girlfriend.
Not yet, but Avery laughed. But I may be next year.
Still, she hesitated as Hope walked her back through reception.
Are you sure you're okay being here alone?
Obviously I'm not alone.
Hope glanced back at the lights glowing behind them.
And I'm okay with it.
Anytime you want me to stay.
You just want to wallow in luxury.
It's a draw.
But seriously, Hope.
Anytime.
I know.
Hope picked up Avery's coat.
Go. Be a girlfriend.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Owen scanned the party prep list he'd posted in his kitchen, checked off music. He had that set. Ditto for the fire, the shopping, the cleaning. He had the game area dealt with for those who aimed for it, and a couple of outdoor heaters on the deck for any who spilled outside. Now all he had to do was put the food together, set up the bar, set up the food, haul the bags of ice he'd stockpiled in the freezer into the tubs for beer and soft drinks, and... What had he been thinking? Oh, yeah, he remembered. Avery. He'd been thinking of Avery. Now he had to cook, and stir and mix and chop and slice and arrange. Better get to it. Gearing up, he gathered supplies, kitchen tools, bowls, trays. Even as he turned to his menu list, he heard his front door open. He heard Avery call out, "Hello," and smiled. His own personal cavalry, he thought, and headed out to meet her.
"Jesus, Avery, let me have that."
He grabbed the enormous stainless steel pot she carried.
"It weighs as much as you do."
"I make popular meatballs, so I made plenty of them. I've just got to run out and get my bag out of the car."
"I'll get it. Take off your coat,"
he suggested, as he set the pot on the stove.
"Get a glass of wine."
"Okay. Bag's in the back seat."
"Be right back."
"The place looks good,"
she called out. But then, it always did. Neat and tidy, of course, but with a comfortable, open style. Quiet colors, she mused, as she headed back. She might have zipped them up a few tones, but they suited him. And she loved his kitchen. He may not do a lot of cooking, as far as she knew, but that hadn't stopped him from building an attractive and efficient space for it. Dark cabinets and walls of pale green onion, which she'd have bumped up to green tomato, she decided, for some energy. Dark wood trim around generous windows and the atrium doors leading to his patio. Slate gray countertops, uncluttered naturally, and gleaming white appliances. She read his posted lists as she took off her coat, laughed to herself. The idea of the party might have been spontaneous, but his planning for it was anything but. Knowing better than to toss her coat and scarf onto one of his kitchen stools, she took them into the utility room, hung them on a peg beside his work jacket. Noted his utility room was tidier than her own bedroom. She stepped back out, opened his broom closet, and took a bib apron off a hook. With the apron over her arm, she switched the heat on under her pot, cut it down to low.
"I put your bag upstairs, so if you need..."
As she turned from the stove, the words, and he figured at least half of his IQ, spilled out of his brain.
"What?"
Immediately she looked down at herself.
"I didn't spill anything on me, did I?"
"Uh-uh. It's just... you look... you look..."
He managed, and her face cleared in a delighted smile.
"That's good?"
"It's... maybe more than half of his IQ." "Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's new. The dress. Hope's been helping me fill in my wardrobe and thin out my bank account.
It's worth it. I forgot about your legs.
What?
Not that you had them, but that they're... like that.
I think you just made my year, right at the end of it. She used the legs to walk to him, and even in the heels had to rise up to her toes a little to mate her mouth to his. Thanks. Absolutely any time. He smelled great, tasted great, looked great. As an idea formed, she stayed where she was, linked her hands behind his head.
That's quite a list you've got there, Owen.
List? Oh, the list. Yeah, a lot of work stuff got in the way the last couple days. I didn't get as much done as I'd planned.
Still a lot.
I have this thought. We've got a couple of hours, a little more, before people start wandering in. And we've put some pressure on ourselves, you and me, waiting until after the party, whenever that is, to ring in the new, so to speak. His arms wrapped loosely around her waist.
I could put out signs. Party canceled.
Extreme. And half of them would just bang on the door anyway.
But what if we took advantage of the time we have now? We could go upstairs and... ring out the old. No pressure at the party that way.
It's a really good thought. I don't want to rush it. You. Us.
I think we can work out an acceptable pace. You could even put it on your list.
He grinned at that, then dipped his head to hers. Avery. He eased her into the kiss. A nice, slow slide that gained a little zip as it went. A very acceptable pace, she thought, adding some zip of her own. The back door burst open. Dumbass trotted in just ahead of Ryder.
Got your big ass ham. If you guys are going to roll around on the floor here, I can dump it, grab a beer, and go.
Christ, Rye!
Sorry. But his easy grin belied the apology. I was under orders from Mom. Swing by, get the ham, bring it here, where she assumed you'd be busy making up for lost time and not making time with Red Hots. Which you are, baby, he said to Avery.
Which I am,
she agreed and grinned back at him.
Orders included me slicing up the big-ass ham if you needed help. I figure since you're busy making up for lost groping time, he added, circling around to get the beer, you don't need my help with that particular to-do item.
He popped the top on the opener on Owen's wall, took a good look at Avery.
Definitely Red Hots. If you're going to muss her up, dude, at least take her upstairs.
Shit, was Owen's comment.
I think the time has passed.
Avery gave Owen's arm a pat, then put on her apron.
Sorry, Ryder repeated. Orders.
Probably for the best. It's a long list, Avery added when Owen just looked at her. And now you have another pair of hands because under the circumstances, Ryder's going to pitch in. Big time.
Orders. But fine.
After he lowered the beer, he leaned into Avery.
You smell good, like exotic fruit and... honeysuckle.
Pomegranate.
Honeysuckle. She sniffed at her own arm.
She must have transferred some. How can she do that, Elizabeth? I ran over to see Hope before I came, and Elizabeth popped down to say hi, or maybe Happy New Year.
You saw her?
Owen demanded.
No, which is annoying. Or a relief, I'm not sure which.
She got a wooden spoon, lifted the lid on her meatballs, mixed them around a little.
Caught the scent, then when Hope and I were talking about how you and Hope should start researching for this Billy she's waiting for, she flipped the lights a few times, then boosted up the wattage. We both took that to mean she'd really like you to find Billy.
No problem. I'll just Google Billy, dead Elizabeth's friend, and nail that down.
Between you and Hope, you'll figure it out.
Avery lifted her eyebrows at Ryder's frown.
What?
How's the innkeeper handling the situation?
Hope doesn't rattle easily, or almost at all.
I wouldn't mind that glass of wine, she said to Owen.
I've seen her rattled, Ryder muttered.
The day Owen saw Elizabeth in the mirror, I'd say Hope was momentarily nonplussed.
Nonplussed,
she repeated, liking the term.
Ryder thought of the first time he'd seen Hope Beaumont, when his mother had brought the then-potential innkeeper upstairs where he'd been working. How she'd gone sheet-pale and glassy-eyed, staring at him as if he were the ghost. But he shrugged.
Whatever.
She spent the night in E&D, had a brief encounter, and went, practically, as she's a practical sort, to sleep. That's Hope. Okay, I've got the spinach and artichoke dip, the stuffed mushrooms, the... pigs in a blanket? Really?
Owen hunched his shoulders.
People like them.
They do. Owen, you should set up the bar, and Rye, slice up that ham.
On the word ham, D.A.'s tail thumped.
Why didn't he do that on spinach or mushrooms?
Avery wondered.
The only vegetable he'll eat is French fries, Ryder told her. He's a picky eater.
Avery only snorted, then got to work.
Probably for the best.
Owen echoed Avery's words as he set up glasses, bottles, hauled ice into tubs. He'd never have gotten everything done if they'd wrung out the old. Much better to stick with the plan, especially since he didn't have any choice with Ryder slicing ham while D.A. sat adoring and hopeful at his feet. By the time he'd finished the bar, the tubs, she had set out scrubbed vegetables, a cutting board, peeler, and knife for him.
"Peel, slice, chop," she ordered. "You've got everything, so I'm adding a pasta salad to your menu. Carbs are good since people will be drinking, including me."
She lifted her glass to demonstrate. The heat from the stove flushed pink in her cheeks, and amusement sparkled the blue of her eyes. It occurred to him he'd seen her like this before, right here in his kitchen, lending a hand with a party, laughing with one or both of his brothers. But he hadn't seen her exactly like this. As a woman he wanted, as a woman who wanted him. Had that one kiss, unplanned, impulsive, really changed the tone and direction of who and what they were to each other? Or had there always been something there, just waiting for that switch to flip? He saw her eyes change, amused sparkle to awareness as he moved to her, watched her lips curve as he drew her in and up for a kiss. Long and soft and sweet.
"You don't have to get a room," Ryder said as he washed his hands off in the sink. "You've got one upstairs." "This happens to be my room, too. Don't you have to go pick up your date?" "I'm Stag. I told you I couldn't take the giggling."
"You canceled a New Year's Eve date?" Avery demanded.
"I'm sparing lives. If I hadn't strangled her before the night was over, someone else would have. I figured if I went for another woman, the whole date on New Year's Eve thing would add the big deal. I'm not in the mood for big deals, so I'm Stag."
Avery got another knife.
"Chop and slice," she told Ryder. "And don't pretend you don't know how."
She went back to the stove, but sent Owen that sparkling look over her shoulder. He'd never before wanted a party over before it began.
Still, it was a good one. Plenty of people, plenty of food, groups spread throughout the house and out on the patio. At some point, someone turned the music up for dancing. He mingled, checked tubs, trays, platters, replenished, took a quick spin with some friends in the game room, and kissed his mother when he found her rinsing off an empty platter in the kitchen.
"You don't have to do that."
"If I don't, you will, and it's your party. And it's a good one."
He took the platter from her, set it down.
"If it's so good, why aren't you dancing with me?"
"Well," she batted her eyes, fluffed at her hair. "I was waiting to be asked."
He pulled her out of the kitchen. Seeing them made Avery smile. She loved the way they looked together, moved together. Halfway through the dance, Ryder moved in, cut in.
"He stole your girl,"
Avery said to Owen when he joined her.
"That's okay. I've got a spare."
He plucked the glass out of her hand.
set it down before he pulled her into the mix of dancers.
Nice moves!
We've danced before, he reminded her.
You've always had nice moves on the dance floor.
I've got a few I haven't tried out on you yet.
Is that